You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, hello, welcome back. It's Stu Goldsmith here. This is the Comedian's Comedian podcast, and today I'm talking to Josh Pugh, a comedic force. I don't know the difference between the words comedic and comic. I think they do the same jobs, but a force nonetheless, hailing from the heart of the Midlands. He was nominated for Dave's Edinburgh Comedy Award in 2022 for one of my favourite show titles, Sausage, Egg, Josh Pugh, Chips and Beans. And there is something genuinely brilliant about... I wanted to do, I mean, it's basically the over to for the traffic news to Ernie Pye with Ernie in the Sky. I wanted to do something similar to suggest that George Egg did a similar kind of broken pun. I love how broken this is. What a title. Sausage, Egg, Josh Pugh, Chips and Beans. He got the comedy. He was nominated for the Comedy Award for that. And he is just such a special, special comedian. He is. We talk in this episode, in this show, about his ability to just nail a premise. There is something fundamental about stand-up that Josh Pugh fundamentally gets. And I think his twin superpowers are that and relatability. This is a really good episode. If you have a Patreon, if you have a Patreon, I have a Patreon, and if you have it with me, you can watch the full episode as well as getting 15 minutes of bonus features where we have a pretty heartfelt conversation, by which I mean I didn't want to leave it in, but I've been convinced because I felt I revealed too much of myself about whether or not stand-up material should be tailored to what the audience wants. Really interesting conversation. Plus, you get to watch the full episode. I only had one camera, so it's only Josh's face, but the lighting is superb. It looks like a music video. It's great. So we're going to talk about creating an audience through viral social media clips. He's the king of that, and I only recently remembered that he was doing it before he started going viral with little piece-to-camera type videos. I don't know what we're calling those even, but, you know, little Instagram reels and TikToks where it's just one person talking. He's so, so good at them. He just makes them look infuriatingly easy. But also, I remember now, before that, he had kind of mini-viral things on Facebook where he'd do, like, a roundup of the week, and he was just such a good writer. Brilliant. We will also talk about being a premise machine and how to turn that into content, and we will also talk about connecting his humility to cope with a disability. So loads of stuff coming up there. He's also a talented footballer representing England's partially sighted team for over a decade, including three world championships. Is there nothing he can't do? Here we go. This is Josh Pugh.
Hello.
Hello, Stu.
What should we start with? You were about to tell me about your podcast, but I was just saying, I often forget to start by sort of establishing who the guest is. Who do you think you are? who are you in comedy?
So I'm a stand-up comedian. I've been a stand-up comedian for 9 years. And I'd say in the last 2 years, maybe 3 years, I've started to get a bit of stuff and started to get a bit of traction online. And more people probably know me from... people probably know of me because of my online videos. Mm-hmm. And then... Yeah, it's interesting. So when I did my tour last year, I'd say, you know... Say if it was a 100-seater room, I'd say 90, maybe 85 are there from videos online. I'd say 5% have maybe seen me do support for somebody.
Yeah.
Maybe 3% miscellaneous, and the rest bits of TVs and podcasts.
Okay.
So yeah, But predominantly, I see myself as a stand-up. I do scripts. I've got, you know, I've got ambitions to do sitcom and that kind of stuff. But the thing I love most and could talk about all day, as we'll probably do, is stand-up. That's what I love.
When you came on stage, we're in Brighton at the moment, and we did Comedia together last night. And when you walked on stage, there was a definite, you know, that thing in it, and you'll recognise this, and maybe you're used to it now, but there was a definite step change in the applause when the audience, some of them were like, it's our guy now. And yeah, some of them were like, oh, it's that guy.
Yeah, I actually didn't notice that last night.
Well, you weren't waiting, having to headline after you, nervously watching, oh, shit.
Yeah, it kind of, I remember, during lockdown, before lockdown, you know, I've always thought I'm pretty good at this. You know, you kind of, even when you're maybe not getting the opportunities you feel you should get at certain points and whatever. But I always kind of thought, no, I am good at this. And then, during lockdown, I started doing these videos without any real plan or strategy, and then I remember coming back and doing an open mic in Birmingham, and nobody comes to this open mic, but it's quite a full room, and I said to the promoter, I said, why is everybody here? And he said, oh, I think they're to see you.
Amazing.
And then I went on, and it was like, I just kind of came back to an audience, and it just, it's so much easier.
And it, as well, like we were talking last night about the way that there are so many comics now and so many different ways of doing it, that there are people now, like years ago, there were people who were big on social media but couldn't necessarily do the job of live stand-up. Yeah. But you are someone who, even before that, I remember you're a comic that other comics go to see.
Yeah, and I've always taken that as a massive compliment, really. But, you know, social media for me, it's nothing. I've never taken it seriously. I've never kind of worried about it, or, I mean, it's a bit different now. It's a bit more thing. But I remember being at college, and it was like a college intranet, and you could put notices on the college intranet. And I was putting silly things and silly notices on this intranet, and people used to like that. And that was kind of my first online content, really, was this notice board. And then it went to Facebook. I remember I used to do these statuses about these made-up gigs I'd done and these kind of shaggy dog stories.
Yes, I remember that. That's a while ago now.
Yeah, it's a while ago.
That's kind of been punted out of my memory by the Instagram stuff taking off.
Yeah, and I kind of, now and again, I get like a Facebook memory of it. And I'm like, oh, that's really funny. And it's so pure, you know, when you're so new, you're just doing, oh, this would be funny to do. And so I was doing that, and then I've just always, just, it's just another platform to mess about on, really. And then kind of, I did it on Twitter, I did my videos on Twitter, and that's very shareable. And then I was like, oh, this, I should do it on Instagram, and then did it on Instagram. And now it's become a bit more, I mean, straight away into the video chat, but I mean, and then it just, I set myself a target last year. I said, I'll do one a week for a year and see where it gets me.
Oh, good. That's sensible.
And then I got to the year, so I can't do another year. And then, so the second year is just coming to an end. And I think I might have a break and just do it as and when it occurs to me.
Okay.
But I'm a bit scared of that as well, because I've, you know, it's what I've done for 2 years every Monday.
It seems to me that you're a couple of different things in disguise. And that in disguise is the wrong word. All I mean is, it took me a minute to notice what was really going on. So I thought, with your stand-up last night, I went, hang on a minute, these are one-liners. Do you know what I mean? Like you appeared to me to be a comic talking about their life.
Yeah.
But the stuff is so densely written is not the word, but it's so kind of clean that you're effectively a one-liner comic. And I was like, you bastard, you get to be a one-liner comic and have hundreds and hundreds of short, very good jokes, but they're within topics and they're within observations. It's like you're very good at both of those things. And I think that's part of why, you know, you went down a storm last night, and I know you've got this special on YouTube as well, which I've seen. I saw that show at Mac, I think, with a bunch of like three or four comics sat next to me at the back when it was in preview. But similarly, I've been watching your Instagram videos for a while, and I rewatched some this morning with this coming up, and part of me went, oh, this is a sketch show. It's not just, it looks like, oh, here's an ad hoc thing I've just thought of. That. And I'm not saying that's a contrivance on your part.
Yeah.
But really, I was like, oh, these are very, you've thought about these.
I'm not an actor. I'm not a character guy. I'm not Alistair Green who can do these brilliant sort of things. They're premises.
Yeah.
Each one is a premise, really. And that's what I've always been good at. Chris Washington, my good mate in comedy, he's always said to me, like a premise machine.
100%.
And I've kind of, I've always said this. I think as like I mean, this is quite an arrogant thing to say, but
come on, hit it.
In terms of like the first pure idea as it appears, I think I'm as good as anybody in the world at that.
Talk to me about that. Let's zero in on that. For the layperson, I know what a premise is. Yeah. What do you understand?
So that's like the initial idea or concept of what then could go on to be a stand-up routine or a joke. I think having that bit, that first idea, that bit of magic, I think I'm so good at that. That's my big super strength is having. And then I suppose it's then about learning what, you know, just, you know, and then... You know, if it was a decathlon, that'd be my big strong thing. And then rinsing loads out of it, that's where I just kind of get worse and worse. So that's for me to work on. But my big strength is a premise. And that's what these videos have allowed me to do, is something that I can't necessarily get to work in stand-up. It's actually, it might be a video then. So yeah, and then in terms of the one-liners, I think when I started, I think it just comes out of wanting laughs all the time and getting, you know... Yeah. But yeah, my big thing is a premise. And then the videos have probably helped me get more out of my ideas. And obviously the nature of a video, you want to finish on a, you know, if it was a sketch show, you'd get out in a big laugh and then it'd be into the next sketch. So just kind of have, you know, not to break the but it's premise, escalation, payoff. That's all it is, isn't it?
And the premises, can you give me some examples of what you mean? Because I think of the videos of yours I think of most often are the most readily, like the club owner with a past. Mm. Like just that, club owner with a past.
Yeah.
It's such a gentle setting up of a character. It's like a world away from the sort of... like, I love the Harry Enfield sketch show.
Yeah.
I love that because it was like it kind of... I think I remember him saying in an interview somewhere else that it was... He sort of... Maybe him and Paul Whitehouse bunk. Probably completely wrong here. But it was something like it arose at a similar time to Viz when it was just... They were just doing like a comic book of like, here's this person and here's what he's up to this week.
Yeah.
And they're very broad strokes characters. Whereas with yours, it's like the subtlety is part of what makes the magic.
I actually think that guy... That down at 4Bean, he's a fledged character, really. I keep saying he is.
Oh, what's the name of the character? Sorry,
Down at 4Bean Coffee.
Down at 4Bean.
he's my generation shopkeeper.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been, you know, Arkwright. He is. It's now roided up hipsters.
Yeah.
So that's kind of and it's just a take on that, really. But some of the first video that really went well for me was the inventing the four cheese pizza. So it was just, I thought, why put four cheese on a pizza? So that's the idea. And then I thought two people coming up with a, you know, you choose an ingredient, cheese. Okay, my turn. And then they've just blanked and all chose cheese and something. So it's, then I thought that's good. But what would make that richer is if it was their opportunity, they've been waiting for the opportunity to do a pizza that they've then fluffed. So I just try and, and talk about, you know, you're saying that I'm things in disguise. What I really am is a big, and people won't think this, I'm a big comedy geek.
Okay.
You know, I'm a bit of, I think people, because, you know, because I do football and a bit of a, you know, talk our talk and all this. But I, you know, love comedy, grew up loving comedy. And I've got a good eye for it. And I really enjoy, I can kind of remember bits. And this sounds mental to say, but you remember Peter Kay sliding on his knees? I'd made that observation before Peter.
That's legitimate. Many of us have had ideas and then gone, that's a good idea, and then discovered either it's been done before or it gets done later by someone who has the ability to kind of...
And then when I seen him do that when I was only a kid, I was like, oh, God, I've had that idea. Maybe this is something I could do, yeah.
Oh, did you remember thinking that as a child?
Yeah. I think not with any kind of plan or strategy, and I didn't kind of do anything until I was like 24. But... I'd always love stand-up.
And... That must have been a funny sort of a moment of, I've had this idea, I've recognised it's funny, I've observed it, and then someone who is widely recognised as one of the greats of Britain has had the same idea.
Yeah, massively reassuring.
A nice word,
Yeah, so...
And you said that people might not expect that from you because you talk how you talk and you look how you look.
Yeah.
What are those things? Like, I've got a sense, you remember we were chatting to Ian Smith last night and we were talking about, you know, his kind of feathery hair and that thing of like, what does an audience see? What do you understand that an audience sees when and hears when you walk on?
Somebody like them, I think. And I don't really, you know, people talk about high status and low status. I think I'm same status. I think I'm them, but have thought these ideas through and present them. That's and kind of condensed things they've noticed into a palatable, fun thing. Yeah. And I think for so long in comedy, people, you know, you're trying to get on stuff, and it maybe isn't always obvious to industry people, or, you know, if that even like what I am. But actually, I've just quite a 4D person you have to spend a bit of time with, and you know that's what stand up is. You're afforded that luxury as a stand up. You can kind of that's your time on the stage. That's your 20 minutes for them to get to know you and what you're about, and that's what I enjoy.
Are there any decisions that you've made about who you are, or is who you like who you are on stage?
Yeah.
Or is who you are on stage to your mind simply who you are?
Yeah, closer and closer and closer. I think I can be I can be dumb on purpose, or can be have like a skewed intellect, but the base is me, and I try. There's I'm a big sports person, so I love there's a boxer called Alexander Usyk, who's like a Ukrainian boxer. Okay. And he hasn't got a real obvious attribute. Like, he's not a big puncher, but he can do so many different things, and kind of he's deceptive in so many ways. And I kind of try not to, I kind of reluctant to go down one thing, or to make a bit, you know, in terms of what I wear and stuff, I just wear what I want to wear, or I kind of, anything that you can be put into a box, I'm not sure it's massively helpful for creativity and being a rich comic voice.
I agree, and I think it's interesting you said the word rich a couple of times. I think I have that word in my head as well, because the characters in the social videos are very rich characters. That's one of the pleasures of them, is that there's a depth and a warmth and a kind of roundedness to them, rather than I think a lot of, I don't, maybe the majority of like one person piece to camera self-shot video stand-up.
Yeah.
Often it's there simply to serve the joke. Where they're like a person doing the joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might as well be wearing a hat that denotes this role, you know? Whereas I think when you do it, and this is interesting because I know you're technically an actor. Your website and Wikipedia describes you as stand-up an actor. Yeah. I can absolutely imagine you being an actor. I can imagine a casting director looking at that, in as much as I know anything about it, looking at those videos and going, oh, here's someone with depth and relatability. And I wonder what the relationship is between, like, you're so relatable, your stuff, like last night, and I recognised some of it from the set, some of it from the YouTube show, some of it I hadn't seen before, but the stuff is so kind of, like Peter Kay, it has a quality which is like an everyman sort of, I remember your bit about your dad going on holiday and immediately get everything in the safe.
Yeah.
And my dad never did that, but I'm a dad and I do that. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, and I feel like all of your observations, I can just go tick, 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 tick. I relate to every single one of these.
Yeah.
In a way that, in a kind of way, it drives me mad, because I don't know how relatable I am as a comic. And I think that's something I've always struggled with, is who are they? Who am I to them? And it's like, you know, it's this fucking 12-year podcast, obviously, for me. Whereas I feel like with you, you're just you and you're real you. And they're like, oh, it's this guy. Like, there's no, it's a funny phrase, there's no airs and graces to you.
Yeah.
You're not coming out, pow. You know, and so airs and graces or whatever that word, ceremony and whatever, that can be brilliant to watch. You're the antithesis of someone like Ruben Kay, you know, who's like big makeup eyes, comes out like a matador, pow.
Yeah.
You just come on and you're you. And that's something I yearn for, is to just go, that's a real guy there. Just a real guy.
But at the same time, you know, that's still a decision to make. You can't just come on and you can't just be an idiot all the time, or you can't just be like, oh, I'm just a guy, I'm just happy to be, because that gets tiring as well. There's got to be some element of performance and, you know.
You're very natural.
Yeah, but I've always, what I'm good at, I've always been kind of, you know, I sit in a weird place really. I can do you know, I'm probably mates with the Club Comics, mm-hmm. and I'm mates with the Soho Theatre. I could probably, I think it'd be hard to, like, I'd get asked to do Mac and stuff, mm-hmm. but then I also do like the Frog and, mm-hmm. and even at school I was kind of, you know, I had my friends, but I was pretty liked, pretty popular guy, really. And in terms of, that's a very arrogant thing to say, but I mean, kind of.
It's not at all. It's not at all. But I can see that one of your likable qualities is humility. Do you mean? So yeah. Like, it's very hard to say. Lots of people like me without yeah. kicking a hole.
But I'd be quite happy in that group or that group or that group. I probably had friends from. I think I'm a bit of a. I don't like the word chameleon because it suggests I'm changing what I am. But I am. I enjoy mixing with different people, and you know, I have the sports side of me, and I've got the comedy side of me, and but actually within that, I'm by myself really. That I'm kind of, you know, if I spend too long with sports people, I'll get fed up with them. If I spend too long with comedy people, I get fed up with them. I like to kind of, yeah.
It must be very nice to have something to which, because we were talking before we started yeah. recording about you've got 65 caps for England.
Yeah, yeah.
As a footballer in which team? What's the name of the team?
So I play for England's partially sighted team.
Okay, gotcha.
And that, you know, and I've grew up with this eye condition.
Yeah. And what is it? I don't know what it is.
So I've basically got about 15% vision. Right, you know, I'm legally blind. My sight is low.
Oh my word.
And there's no way that hasn't impacted on the way I've gone through school and gone through. You know, I'm a person. You know, when you've got something like that, when you grow up with, you know, you're the one kid in the school with something like that, you kind of. It's in my interest for people to help me. I've got to be somebody that people would want to help and be around. That for the pack to, because you know, if I was in the wild, I'm the vulnerable one. So I need these guys to. I need to bring something. You know, they need to like me. You know.
Do you think there's a relationship between that and humility, and your humility as a person and your humility on stage, your kind of likability?
What do you mean? Sorry, sure.
Well. I mean, you may have sort of already confirmed yeah. this, but I'm just interested in, like, to what extent was that deliberate? Like, did you ever have the thought, oh, I've got to make sure I get on with people because I need people, or is it simply a case of the circumstances around you growing up?
Yeah, I think it's just it's nice to be liked anyway. And if anything, I'll never leverage it. If anything, you know, kind of people probably help me much more. I've never asked for help off anybody. I'm so reluctant to ask for anything. And I think that in itself makes people want to help you, weirdly.
What does 15% mean? Is it like distance or?
It's like my central vision. So at school, I couldn't read off the board or any textbooks. Mm. And this was kind of like the late 90s, early 2000s. Like now at school, everybody's, my wife at school, everybody's got a statement or they're involved with the Senko, the, you know, the special educational needs team. Whereas at my school, I was like a real, they didn't know what to do with me really. And I kind of got moved around a bit. And actually at school, it's the biggest thing. It's the hardest thing because that's when you're trying to access textbooks and the board. And, you know, I'm like an August birthday. So I was always the small kid. I'm the small kid that can't see, you know. Mm. So I think undoubtedly that's had a big impact on how I am and stuff.
It must have been hard. Did you take it hard? Like, did you become kind of introverted or sad about it? Or did you, like...
I think I struggled with it when I got to my early 20s. I think at school, you just kind of get on with it at school, and it didn't really, you know, I still played football and did rugby and boxing and all this stuff, and I didn't really understand how hampered I was by it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
My mum had me very young, and my dad was... And I kind of... They didn't know anything about it. Nobody really, and I didn't realise the disadvantages I had. I didn't understand why other people have to do things so easily, and for me it was harder. And then as I got kind of to 20s and that, I was a bit resentful of it. But now I'm completely comfortable with it, and you know, it's given me so much really.
Is one of those, me and my son both have asthma. We both have allergic asthma.
Yeah.
And it's funny, he gets really frustrated about having to take his Preventer inhaler every day. And I've said to him in the past that I kind of try and keep it as a... Sometimes when he's like, I don't want to take, I'm never taking it again.
Yeah.
I just have to sort of remind him, in medieval times, we'd be dead. We'd have died by now.
Yeah, totally.
So, like, there's a sort of thing where you go, like, it's really encouraging and sort of positive to hear someone say, it was very hard then, I struggled then, but now there's the...
Yeah, it's shit, yeah, and it took me, I'd say into my 30s, to even tell people, or, you know, kind of...
Yeah, it's not something that's visible. You know,
yeah, and on stage, it's kind of it's a bit of a luxury, really. You know, I'm not, you know... You know, if kind of Rosie Jones goes on, her first couple of minutes has got she's got to reference her disability, whereas I've got the luxury to use it or not use it. I hate the word use it, but I haven't got to address it.
And do you have gear about it? Did you in the early days? Did you?
No, never. No. Never. I never wanted, and I've got a bit of a rule with it in my shows. I only use it as much as it affects my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's in my show as much as it's in my life. It's a little rule I've given for myself.
What do you mean by that?
So, I don't know, I kind of... So it'd be like the back end of the show and it'd have to inform something. I wouldn't... If I'm going to talk about it, I want it to be in a way that means something rather than a gag.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about premises.
Yeah.
Is it teachable, the knack that you have of going... And what is it? Let's just zero in on that a bit more. It's the ability to look at it and go... Because I often have ideas and I think, yeah, but what's the premise? Is it to do with attitude? Is it to do with, like, what's the sort of the funniest bit of the idea? Is it to do with clarity on that and how you express it?
It's just noticing things and noticing... contrast and juxtapositions, and I just make a note of it on my phone, and I'll never be so, I don't know, so I made a note on my phone about, I'd moved house, and the removals guy, he left his lunch at home, and this is the removals guy, the one thing he had to bring of his own, he's left at home, and now that is just, anything, I don't know, it's really hard.
Like that has an internal kind of paradoxical logic. That's the worst thing that could happen for that guy.
It's a logic. Yeah, it's like a logic. It's like juxtapositions, and it's something. It's sometimes just completely hypothetical. Like, imagine if this happened, or you know, and I just write everything down. I just always looking, even if I don't know I am.
And with that removal man lunch thing, is that gear now?
That's literally something of.
Yeah.
That's just the first thing I can think of. And that is objectively a premise.
Yes.
What I do with it next is kind of, that's the hard bit, and that's what I'm trying to get better at.
And can you draw the line for us? Can you kind of describe the journey of a bit that you did last night, say, or a bit that's like a working bit? And take me back to the premise and go, and then I tried that and did that and did that with it. Are you in a...
Yeah,
that's
so,
a big ask.
Yeah, so I got this new bit last night I did about the parenting advice and your parents giving you advice.
Yeah.
And about, I won't do the bit, but my parents have brought up two babies.
Yeah.
Out of 7 billion babies on this planet. What gives them the right to advise? You know, they haven't... Based on that data, you wouldn't... take advice based on that data in any other walk of life.
Yes.
So that's the premise is they've only brought two babies up.
Yes. And then you need to extrapolate that into the next stage, which is transpose that logic onto a
new thing.
Yeah.
With an act out with the funniest thing at the end.
And can you generate premises, or do you have to just notice them? Do you just have to be open to them falling into your head?
The second one, I have to just, I have to find them. I wouldn't sit down. It to me, it would seem silly to sit down without a premise and try and write. I think you're setting yourself up to fail there. I think you should sit down with something.
Are there any means of, like,
you could observe something that isn't a premise and make it a premise, if that makes sense. If you've noticed something and written it in your phone, there'll be something in it, I think. Because your brain's like flagged it.
That's a good rule to have. If it exists there as a thing, if it exists as a note, then there's something to it. There's something I try to remind myself. I may have even arrogantly said this to audiences, with tongue in cheek. to say, listen, this thing that I've just said didn't work, but the job I need to do is work out, like, it is funny.
Yeah.
I just haven't communicated what I find funny about it yet.
Totally.
And that's why no one's laughing. But trust me, that's funny.
I've got the same thing. I went to Cheltenham races and I missed the first race. And 30 horses set off at the correct time and I missed it. I live 40 minutes away and I missed it. Now that is, I can't get that to work yet, but that is objectively the, and I probably might not even ever work it out. Or if I do work it out, it might not be a stand up and it might have to go, but I could get it further on than it is.
And do you have a toolkit for what to do next with that specific idea? What would be, would you kind of like sit down and write, put it in your phone while you're walking around and to try and go, okay, how, like, what are the options? And like off the top of my head, I'd be like, you could explain that that was a real thing that happened and you could insert an attitude in it and be frustrated or I'm quite proud of myself that I'm so late. You could take different kind of
totally. You know,
emotional attitudes towards it.
Totally that. So it'd be, I suppose it'd be why, what does that say about me? What does that say about me?
I recognise that. There's echoes of that in some of your stuff.
What does that say about me? Like, I can't even... And then I'd probably build up the horse story. Like, that, how they started. Some of those were in Ireland. They had to get on a... And I'd probably make that sillier.
Yeah.
And then make my journey simpler. Just, you know, the juxtaposition of their... Yeah. Them, one, A, being horses. Somebody had to drive them. They, you know, so, and I'd kind of... And I'd make my journey easier. Yeah. And then it'd be like how... And that'd be... You'd have to frame it as, you know, how useless am I? Or how, you know... Or maybe... you know, and then you can do different... I suppose it might even be like, you know... But they that is their job, to be fair. I'm there for leisure, you know. It's kind of like,
And there's something there as well. It's not simply the premise. The word leisure is an excellent, it's a very funny word choice there. I made some notes. I don't mean to interrupt the flow here, but I wrote down some stuff last night, I think, including whilst I was watching you, some stuff about the word choice. I don't think it's updated. There's a lovely joke about the way that the generation of men before you just were so lazy and pathetic.
Yeah.
And it's a love, you're very good at a pullback and reveal that doesn't feel like one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, pullback and reveal, that's sort of a derided term now. Yeah. It's like the and then I got off the bus kind of cliche.
Yeah, totally.
But you're very good at a sort of a switcheroo of the thing it is that you're frustrated about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And some of those, I mean, that's a particular example, that could, that's getting towards being a bit edgy. That's the edgiest I ever get.
Yeah, it's not very edgy.
But
what you're riffing on is, I'm an unreconstructed male.
Yeah, why do I not get to do that?
Yeah, but it's not edgy though, is it? Because we like you and trust you.
Yeah.
But I see what you mean. It might be the edgiest you get.
Yeah,
it
might
be. In the
sense
of, like, revealing an unlikable quality to yourself.
Yeah, I feel... You know, it is unfair. Is like I don't get to be lazy just because of, you know.
Does an audience, I mean, because you seem like supernaturally likable and really likable in a very specific, not likable in a kind of like Graham Norton is likable because he's sort of out there and big and bright and twinkly and what have you. You're more likable in a kind of salt of the earth. I always think this of Andrew Bird. If I was casting a movie and I needed a guy in a metal helmet with a sword, I'd call him Birdie because he's just got that quality.
He's got the jaw as well. Actually.
You've got a similar. You could be in the Night's Watch in Game of Thrones.
I'll take that.
What is that? Is it like a sort of man of the people kind of quality or something?
I don't know. It's just kind of, you could get into, I live in a very, you know, I live in the middle of the country.
You're from Warwickshire, aren't you? I grew up in Warwickshire. Yeah, I grew up in Leamington.
Yeah, so I'm in the north. So I'm at Atherston, Nuneaton, and Bedworth. So the arsehole of North Warwickshire, I think it's been called. But I think Gavin and Stacey is a great sitcom because I think it captures how a lot of people in Britain live more than any other sitcom has for so long. I think I'm like a lot of people, and maybe that voice hasn't been heard for a long time. Or I think it was a massive thing to me, and this just sounds so silly, and I'm kind of ashamed it took me this long. But as soon as I realised it isn't about those people in comedy, it's about all those people who could be audience. As soon as I started working on things for them and what they would love, it just changed for me.
What were you doing before?
Just kind of, you know, making decisions, you know, making artistic decisions based on what trends were or what seemed to, you know, get on TV or, you know, tropes of,
Can you give me some examples?
I actually didn't realise how mainstream I was as a comedian. I'm probably more Paddy McGuinness than Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
And when I realised that, even things like that, so people, you know, people slating Paddy McGuinness's stand-up, it's quite a popular thing to do. Comedians will slag that off. And my way of thinking is, you know, loads of people love that. Yeah. And he represents something to those people. And I think to dismiss that is maybe why you're not connecting with the population. It's just about connecting with people, I think. I think, I don't know.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
So this is Josh. I got a bit giddy at the beginning of these blurbs, and I can only apologise for that now, because he is such a quiet, considered and humble guy. And we will find out at the very end of this episode, is he happy? And obviously he's happy, but the specific way in which he's happy is brilliant. I was telling people about this recording for ages after recording it, just when I would see people socially. There is something so lovely about his appreciation of what's important. He's like a brilliant, happy comedian, and you don't get many of them. We're going to talk in the second half about what Josh thinks are his strengths as a comic. We'll talk about coping with bad gigs, finding out what actually matters, and finding out whether he's happy. Spoiler alert, yes. His existing La Vida Loca tour tours throughout the UK to June this year. You can see the full list of dates at joshpughcomic.com, and you can watch Josh Pugh live from Birmingham Town Hall on YouTube. That's on the £800 Gorilla Media channel. A great bunch of dudes they are. Also, I mean, obviously you can follow him at Josh Pugh Comic on everything, but I particularly recommend Instagram and TikTok. Although he's on Twitter as well, Josh Pugh Comic. A quick guest announcement now. If you are one of the people who's managed to snag a ticket to Mac to come and see Spoilers, I think there's maybe 4 tickets or 5 tickets left. I'm hereby now announcing the guests. The guests are Nathaniel Metcalf, Amy Gledhill and Chloe Petz. That is going to be a rip-roaring whatever it is. What is Redacted? It's sort of a dick about panel game, com-com flavoured thing full of scurrilous rumours and gossip. And if we do ever release it, it will only be to the Insiders Club, and it will be heavily bleeped, no doubt. So come along to that if you can grab one of those final tickets. That's Saturday the 4th of May at the McCuncliffe Comedy Festival at 4 p.m. The few tickets now are on sale at maccomedyfest.co.uk. Also, Spoilers has got tickets still available. It's a big old room, and I was there last year. But now, last year was, as you remember from this podcast, it was frustrating for me because the show was getting there but not there, and now the show is super there. So if you have missed it, I don't know if I'm going to tour it. I don't know if I'm ever going to release it because I'm doing so many other things with it. Please, if you're at Mac, come along and see Spoilers. I think you will love it and it will make you feel good despite being about the climate. So it really will. I think it really will. Go to maccomedyfest.co.uk for all of that and joshpughcomic.com to find out where you can get tickets for Existing La Vida Loca. Another superb title. Back to Josh.
Someone's asked a question that I don't understand, but because the people have put the laugh emoji under it,
okay.
I'm wondering whether I can, you can understand a joke, you can work backwards.
Yeah.
Have you done a video about being a physiotherapist?
So this was the last video I did, so last Monday. So even the decision to put my videos out on a Monday morning, that is me saying people are going to work on a Monday morning, I should be up commuting with them. That's me.
Okay.
So that's why I did my video then.
Okay.
Even that was, and so the last video I did was about seeing a physio, and basically the physio telling you look, your body's wrong, your job's wrong, your shoes are wrong, but stay positive. And I didn't realise how relatable that was.
Well, that's the question was from Al, who's Al Knapp, who's a listener and pal, and he said, when did he meet my actual physiotherapist?
Yeah.
So obviously that's what the question.
Yeah.
I worked out what the question was. And
I think that had 2.2 million views on Twitter. Which is just like, that Monday morning 60-second video, they all do really well, touch wood. And that is, that's better than being on TV in terms of eyes on you.
Yeah.
Not to go back to the videos, but I just film it on my phone with a camera. I can't do editing. I can't really see to do the stuff. I can't do anything mad with it. I've got to do it in one or two takes. And I think even that is weirdly, because there's no shine on it, I think people relate to that more as well.
Do you write it? Do you write it like a routine? Say it takes like a week to, or you do one a week?
Try and do one a week. I kind of, it's become a bit of an albatross around my neck really, but I kind of, I've done two this morning in my room because it's white walls and that's much, wear a black t-shirt, stand in front of a white wall, look towards the camera, make sure your face is in it. So I'll get the beats. So I'll get the premise, the beats, do it a few times. I might find one or two more things when I'm doing it and then just get the crispest take of it.
So, because they're about a minute long, aren't they?
Yeah.
So you kind of go for like a rough cut one of like, that's the premise, that's the beats, I'm going to do it. And if it works, great, it's done.
Yeah.
And if you trip over or discover anything else, you're like, go again and try and find the same sort of reality.
Yeah, totally. And but weirdly, I have this with jokes as well, the shorter the time from concept to execution, the better it performs.
Totally. It's so easy to do work in inverted commas.
Yeah.
Feeling like I better do some work.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Then everything you do ruins the original joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's not always the thing. Sometimes you get an idea and then sharpen it and hone it.
Yeah.
But definitely they were like, boom, that bit, that punch, that thing, and then let's prettify it. Oh, it's dead now.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So what else? What are the other kind of things that go into the videos in terms of like, if you've got like you did two this morning? Is that because?
Yeah.
You need content for Monday morning, or is it because you were wandering around and you went, oh, hang on, that would work, and you came up with it there and then?
Yeah, it's got to the point now they were because I need to have two in the can.
Okay.
And I'm away from my family for a weekend, and I'll try and maximise the time and do
it. And were they based on notes from your phone?
Yeah, so that they've, it's got to the point now.
Can you tell me, given that they've not gone out yet, so this won't go out for a while, but what was one of the ones that you did?
So one was about, I think he's like a decorator in an art gallery.
Okay.
And obviously he's there as a painter and he's not, he's kind of saying, they're good, but, and then his relationship as a painter and the great artist, and statistically he's got more painting in this art gallery than these renowned artists.
So that's by square meterage.
Yeah. So that's pure premise. It's a guy, there's an attitude to it because he feels a certain way.
And he feels kind of aggrieved that he isn't getting the recognition.
There's probably a bit of wordplay, like the painter thing. That could be, in someone else's hands, that would just be a misdirection, like a one-liner. And then there's a bit of attitude, but and I kind of did that. And then I think the other one we did was just a guy saying, "I got you, I got you," and the other guy being like, "What? Thank you, but also what?" In kind of a vague tokenistic way, I was, you know, kind of just really drilling into these, you know, people, you know, you're having a bad time and people text you saying, "Oh, here, I'm here for you, mate." But what are you actually offering there? And there's an honesty to that one. Now we think about it, there's a real honesty to, you know, don't just say, what do you mean? Like, what, yeah, financial, you know. So yeah, they're the two. So one's like a pure premise, almost like a sketchy, that's quite a sketchy, the painting one, that's kind of quite a sketchy premise, isn't it? That could be like, you know, a sketch group could do that.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, it's almost a stand-up bit brought to life on video.
And do you have a sense when you make them of which ones will go and which ones will, you know, by which I mean which ones will get 200,000 and which ones will get 2 million? Do you get any sense, or is it all
random? Yeah, I do. And it'd be easy for me to put down to brilliant comic instinct, was actually I've done a video every week for 2 years and I've probably learnt, you know, sometimes the things we think are instinct are actually, we've got loads of data because we've done it for so long.
Yeah.
And that's actually what sport helps me so much in comedy, just in terms of, you know, in terms of, I'd like to think I've got a bit of flair and stuff about what I do, but also I do, you know, if numbers are telling me something, I will listen to it.
That's interesting. I think that this sport, that's come up a few times in podcasts in the past, that with other comics, I mean, that like a background in sport is a really healthy thing to have, because you want to succeed, but you know that you can't necessarily be the best in the world. So yep. It doesn't mean that it's all been for nothing if you're not the best in the world, because you're playing. Like, do you see comedy like a sort of a game that you're playing, that it'd be great to win at this? And I can, you know, you've made reference, you know, these are my strengths and that's what I need. I'm working on myself. It's very sport-oriented.
Yeah, I suppose it is. It's kind of, you know, if you're a certain kind of tennis player, you want the game to go a certain way because that's what your strengths are, and you'll try and engineer the game to go that way. And if sometimes you're out of your depth in a certain thing, you've got to just make do. And you can do it there, but you'd rather... I'm specifically thinking about Tim Henman going to the net and Andy Roddick being at the back of the court. Where I'm at my depth is, so stand up, I feel very comfortable stand up. You know, I really kind of back myself as a stand up. Where I'm learning and where I'm not so strong is like a panel thing or a podcast, because my strengths as a stand up are writing and thinking an idea through and presenting the idea in the best way. I'm quite a quiet person, really. Like, so much of, you know, I've done panel shows where if that game was going on in my house, I'd go in the other room. But here I am on TV having to not only do the game, but also be, you know, be upbeat and I'll just stay quiet. You know, I only speak really socially when it's worth saying something. Whereas to not, you know, to force things out, it really puts me out of my comfort zone, and I feel, yeah, I think I've done okay on stuff, but it's, yeah, that's where, so where other comics are, you know, the more maybe personality driven, that's where they would really thrive. And I'm kind of out my depth and wish I was, for the 10 minutes, I wish I was like them, you know?
Yeah. Is there a sporting analogy you could employ to think about that? Do you know what I mean? Like, to think more warmly and more positively about it. Is it a case of, like, you know, you've got to just, like, you've just got to take loads of shots? Do you know what I mean?
Possibly.
You kind know what of, I mean? In a mock the week situation,
yeah,
you just need to just bang as many gangs out as you can,
yeah,
and feel good about them and just ignore it if they miss. I don't know what sport that's analogous to.
And there's a bit of punching, there's a bit of shooting.
Every so often you get to pop up and throw a dart.
Yeah, yeah, not really. But I'm working it out, and I will work it out. That's my other thing. I will eventually work anything out. When I think about the Edinburghs I've had, so I've been going 9 years, I've done 5 Edinburghs. I did my first, starting in 2017, I debuted at the Pleasance with not a clue what that meant in 2017. And then I had some bad Edinburghs. But, you know, the show was okay. The show was, you know, the bit of backing and Emperor's New Clothes, you know, it's as good a show as any of the new shows. But then I would just learn how to, you know, just learn how to do it. And I'd always do a good Edinburgh show now, if you know.
You've had some cracking titles.
Yeah.
Tell me, that's one of the questions, actually. That's a credit to the question. I'd have asked this anyway, but look, this is well put.
Yeah.
Paul Savage, top contributor, it says.
Oh, legend.
Hello, Paul. He has two shows which I would consider among the very best show titles ever. I think I'd agree with this, actually. Maybe the Real Edinburgh Awards are the friends we made along the way. And I think when I don't think I knew you, but I may have texted you or messaged you to the time to say, that is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And Sausage, Bacon, Egg, Josh Pugh, Chips and Beans. Yeah. How important is that in getting an audience or pre-filtering them? Or is it just a laugh?
So that... Initially, I think, to you know, what we're saying about digging deeper, I would say it's a laugh, is what I'd say. But if you really, you know, if you really looked at it, if you dug it...
You think it's instinct, but you're prepared to accept that there is decision being, decisions being made.
I think that's born out of having, you know, not having an agent and not having a promoter or producer and just clutching at something. It's just another opportunity to be funny. And I'll take it. To try and get people in.
I saw that show, maybe the Real Comedy Awards of the Friends We Made Along the Way, on the basis of the title.
Yeah.
And I think I can't be alone in having done that.
Yeah,
you
mean?
And certainly, and that's one of those things I think that comics love as well. Like, it's so easy to fall into the trap, I think, as a comic, now that we all have to be writer, producer, director, videographer, all those rest of those things. It's easy, I think, for me, certainly, I'm going to speak for myself, to fall into the trap of optimising. I'm just trying to optimize. I'm just trying to do that as best I could, that as well, and that as cleverly and efficiently as possible. And actually, doing things because they're funny, for the sake of a funny thing, is something it's easy to overlook in the scramble to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then you turn around 10 years later and you're like, oh, fuck, well, these people who were just having fun are doing really well because people respond warmly to people having fun.
And also, it's kind of it's a decision not to be cool. It's a decision to... That's your title for the year, is it? You know, it's a decision not to... You know, you've not had a cool photo shoot and, we're not making an album, you know, we're not making a music album. It's kind of... I suppose it's kind of me saying, I'm not taking... It's not a big, cool photo shoot.
There's a lot of big, cool photo shoots.
Yeah.
I've done a few.
And it's hard. People get it wrong, and I mean... You know, it's hard. That I find that the hardest bit of the job is what to wear on anything, what to do in photos.
Yeah.
Because that's the 2D personality stuff rather than, that's not writing or it's hard to be rich and do anything in that. It's just kind of, well, I'll just come on and just smile. And
I feel like there's two or three photographers who understand how to get richness and they're incredibly expensive as a result.
It was so interesting. When I got nominated in 2022 last year, the photo shoot, you didn't go and do a photo shoot, and it was so interesting the photo shoot with all the nominees, and I was looking, I was like, oh, everybody's doing their thing on this photo. So Colin Holt, brilliant comedian, had his head through the zero.
Yeah.
Alfie Brown was there in a pair of sunglasses, just like that. Sam Campbell was eating a bacon sandwich.
Everyone's rejecting the concept in a fun way.
Everybody's boiling down their thing. And I think I just look like a guy that like gone to pick his kids up from school.
But even
that was my thing.
Yeah, of course. God, that would terrify me. I wouldn't know what to do.
It's such a pure example of, oh, this is that, because that's what stands, you know, more than the show. That's what, you know, you look back 20 years' time, it'd be that picture.
God,
and it'll be that, and it's so interesting. And it's like, I think I probably was the only person that noticed it. I've had a couple of bits. I've got a new bit about getting in a 7-seater taxi, and I'm so proud of it because the six of the people in the taxi were all comedians.
Yeah,
and I got it.
You noticed it.
Yeah. And I think in that moment, I think I was the only person that noticed. Oh, we're all doing what we think we are. In a in a still.
It's like those mad gigs they have in London where there's so, we were talking last night about the insane state of standing, of starting stand-up comedy at the moment.
Yeah.
Where I remember doing like Amused Moose gigs where it'd be like, okay, everyone does 5 minutes and you rattle through. And those types of gigs now, like everyone does 2 minutes or a minute and a half. That photo is almost like the ultimate reduction of that concept.
Yeah.
Walk up, look the way you look, or, you know, assume, strike the pose that is you.
Yeah.
And we'll get through 1,000 comics and we'll choose 3 of them to become famous.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Do you do crowd work?
If I absolutely have to.
That's an answer.
Yeah. If I absolutely am forced into doing crowd work, I will. I can't really see the audience, which is hard.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But I will engage in it if I need to. Or if I've got a gen...
You do. What's your name? Where are you from? What do you look like?
Yeah. But I'm not really interested in it. I'm not really interested in crowd work. I love to see it done well. But it doesn't really interest me. It's not... I think when I do it, you know, if there's a list of things I would need to get better at.
Yeah.
Crowd work. You know, if I was a coach and I was sitting down with me and looking at the next year, that would be something. But
let's have that conversation. Yeah. I want you to be a coach and I want you to sit down with you and go, like, what other things would you say as that coach?
Yes.
I often ask people what your strengths and weaknesses are, so let's stick with the sports analogy.
So I'd say that you need to manage yourself better. The decisions you make in terms of what you take. I think I need to get better at being Josh Pugh on something. Because you can't, you know, there's a trajectory potentially here where I go, you know, bigger than I am now, who knows. And you can't just be, he's a normal guy, happy to be here. People will tire that very quickly.
There'll be
a core of that forever in me because that's who I am.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's like everybody's second show, like John Bishop's second show, Mickey Flanagan's second show. It's about them, the normal person, becoming a famous person.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's at some point you've got to just managing the next step of my career and being, you know, look, you know, Mickey Flanagan's got a great joke about shoplifting from service stations and his wife going, "Mickey, you're a millionaire."
I love his bit. He talks about being in a hotel. He says, "It's a very nice hotel. You'd like it. You should work harder."
Crowd work. But at the same time, fuck it. If I don't want to do it, I don't have to do crowd work. You can listen. You know, I'll do it if I have to. But I'm not going to go out and spend 6 months getting better at crowd work. What's the point? You know.
Yeah.
I'll just be. What you should actually work on is just being present in the room, rather than thinking, "Oh, I'll go and work, practice doing crowd work." I'll just go and I'll be present in the room and just deal with anything that happens. And then just dig deeper into my bits, you know, kind of try and get a bit more out of them. Try and, you know, try and get to the truth of the bits and what I'm saying. And just kind of, I'm so proud of myself when I do a new show and I've got a new show. I've done it. I didn't think I could do it again. I've done it again. When you get a new bit, it's still the best thing, isn't it? You're so happy, and that's the best feeling, really.
What bit are you most excited about at the moment that's new?
I spoke a few times about not getting to be lazy bit. I think that'll be, that's new. That's going to be,
yeah.
And I've got another bit to that I didn't do last night.
And will you dig down into that bit? Like, as you expand it,
yeah.
Will you listen to the coach, Josh, and go, as I expand this and make it funnier and more reliable or whatever those things are, also, what does it say about you and what does it say about the world and those kind of things?
Yeah, I'm doing that, aren't I? You know, same about instinct. I'm not consciously doing that, but I am doing it. That's going on, isn't it? That's going on in your analytical brain. That is happening. Just because I'm not sitting down and drawing out, what's that say about me? Yeah. That I'm kind of just trying to be honest with myself, you know, and that kind of thing. So that bit, and then, I've got this idea about Nepo babies, which I want to do something with. I want to do a pro Nepo babies bit. It's a bit of a challenge for myself.
Yeah.
Because I want to have a Nepo baby. That's what I want. And this thing that we've all got to start from scratch every time.
Yeah.
I think it's such a British thing. No head starts. Yeah. No head starts. And I'm very, you know, I never get into the working class chat or the, you know, the privately educated chat, because one, we're adults. We left school 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And also, they're just doing that, you know, they've just come out as a baby, and that's where they are, and it's where we are. And we're all in this, we're all in Britain. They get a little advantage in Edinburgh, but we've got the massive advantage of knowing how a lot of the population, you know, if you're, yeah. I think my upbringing and where I'm from has been such an advantage to me. Not economically, but such an advantage in terms of, you know, seeing how people live, the kind of people you're around, the kind of jobs you have, you know, it's been really helpful. And all the big, you know, this working class stuff, all the arena comics are all, they're all working class comics. We think of these, you know, the kind of the middle class and the private educated, they're doing great in Edinburgh, but the next, the big hitters, your Peter Kays, you know, Gervais, so much, they're working class comics. And it's because of the people who are around, I think.
How do you cope when things go badly? How do you cope when gigs go badly? How do you cope with, I don't know, envy or missing out on things? Or
To be very honest, I've been so blessed the last 2 years. I haven't really missed out on anything. Anything I have missed out on, I probably wouldn't know about. And I don't really hold anything in any esteem, and I don't mean that as a disrespect, but I certainly, you know, you can't say Live at the Apollo doesn't matter when you're not on it, and then suddenly it matters when you're on it. I don't really, you know, I don't really hold any one thing in any great esteem, and I get what I get, and I'm so, you know, I get, it's different because I'm getting, you know, making a living, and I'm doing well, and I'm getting plenty of opportunities. So it's a really hard question to answer, you know. But I am Soho never meant anything to me, you know. Not getting a Soho one, that would certainly, you know, doesn't. I remember people doing statuses on Facebook about that they've got their dream of a run at Soho.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, what, a black box theatre in the city you're not from? what does that mean? And so yeah, I kind of when it goes, the only thing I find hard is, this being a job and me getting my head around that this being a job and this is how I make my living, and I can't really get my head around it.
Talk to me about that. What aspect of it?
I just can't get my head around. I can't, like, I'm at work when other people are not at work, and vice versa. I just can't. I kind of, and it's not a guilt. It's more of, I just kind of, I'm a person. You know, the sports, I thrive on routine and knowing what's coming and knowing what my weeks look like. And my happiness is based around me getting into a routine, doing the things that I need to do. And when that is thrown out, it does take me a minute to...
Yeah.
I can, and, you know, my wife, she bears the brunt of it, really, and she's, you know, she's so good. So, yeah, that's the big thing I struggle with, is this is what I'm doing, and it's... Yeah.
Emma Edwards says, please can Josh remind me of the punchline for him fitting in with the office banter? I know I spat my wine out, but I can't remember the line.
Yeah. Shall I just say the line?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's get your fanny out, Carol. Yeah.
Will he give up the footballs, asks Paul Rangecroft, if his comedy success continues to grow?
You know, it's so hard because, you know... Stand-up, you can keep getting better at stand-up, but sport, there's a, you know, your age and...
Yeah.
And, but I'm in a unique position that, you know, it's disability sport, and nobody probably would know about our squad, or less people know about our squad if it wasn't for me. So I've got a bit of a... Although I can, you know, my contribution on the pitch will diminish. The longer I can stay involved and shine a light on the other lads and the sport than the world. And also it's your David Beckham, I think he's looked 50, Beckham. And he says he's not retired from England. He said, I'm ready. If you need me, I'm ready. So that's my approach.
Graham Rayner says, given this is related, given the choice, sell out an arena or captain the Para Lions to a World Cup victory?
So yeah, World Cup, win World Cup. Same that the arena thing, you know, it's, I wouldn't hold that in any regard above anything else. It's a great thing, but it's just...
Okay. You don't need comedy to make you happy.
I do, but I just need to be doing it. I just need to be doing comedy to make me happy. I don't need to get... Yeah. But it's easy to say when you're getting stuff again. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's easy to say.
Yeah, and you've had a, like, you did the all the competitions you did, you won, didn't you? You just went ping, 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 ping. And
well,
just kind of...
I had a bit of a weird trajectory. I had a really good start. And then I signed with my first agent. He did a Christian comedy.
Oh yeah,
but I was just so happy to get an agent. I was like, yeah, and then I left, and then I joined another agent, and it was quite a frustrating period, and I don't think they knew what to do with me, or really, and then I couldn't get an agent for like 2 years, so before lockdown, it was mad. I was going to sign with them. I couldn't get. I emailed all the agents and tried, and by this point I'd done. I think they weren't interested because I'd done my debut and spunked my debut.
Okay.
Which, that's my advice, by the way, if you want to be a proper comedian forever, go and spunk your debut.
The advice is to do that.
Yeah.
Get it started. I'm good. I'm glad. So there's so much gaming the system going on.
Yeah.
It's all based on...
It's holding
like,
you back. You could be on your third hour and be a really good hour. And you can... There's a main award, by the way, you know, which you can get if you're an awards person. And then I couldn't get an agent for... I remember I had a meeting with this agent and... I won't say the name, but started the meeting by saying, we take the acts that the big agencies have given up on. And then ended the call by saying, we're not going to be taking you. and then I signed with Hannah Martin at PBJ, who she just got it straight away. She was like, she said it was like finding a lottery ticket. She's like, I can't believe no one's taking you. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And then she moved... So she's been a massive factor to have somebody who really believed in me and also knows my strengths and stuff and what I would like to and what I wouldn't like to do. You know, you can't underestimate, you know, all this online stuff, but having someone else doing something for you and knows people and is liked by producers, it's still a big, it still exists for a reason, you know.
Just to come back before we wrap up, just to come back to that point about you don't need, I just want to spend some time with that because I think that is an incredibly useful takeaway from this. You seem to be, you know, I like to finish by asking people, are you happy?
Yeah.
Are you happy?
You know, I am very happy. Yeah. I have a lot of struggles if you ask my wife that, I struggle a lot, but I love doing comedy. And I'm the best I've ever been in terms of mental health. I mean, I was a depressed kid. I've got it in me to be like that. But I'm doing well, and I'm having for the most part, I'm having a really nice time. And it's, you know, I'm aware of how lucky I am and stuff. And yeah, just kind of what I need to work on is actively enjoying myself, and. That's what my new show is, Existing La Vida Loca. That's what it's about. It's about being in the moment and enjoying it and getting stuck in.
Because that's something that you struggle with.
Yeah, struggle to... and also to... A big thing I've learned, massive thing I've learned, if you get something, you think it's going to make you feel a certain way and then it doesn't, don't panic. It is okay. It doesn't matter. It's not... You know, if you walk into a room and it's not the room you thought, it's okay. It'll take a minute and all. And... So that's a big thing I'm working on, and that'd be, you know, if I was coaching myself, I'd say try and, you know, enjoy these great things you're getting to do. But it's really hard because it's a fine line between, because I never want to be in awe of anything or hold anything any massive regard. That can sometimes be I don't ever want to be flippant about an opportunity or ever not give something the respect it deserves, which I wouldn't do in terms of a work thing, but also because I'm so hell bent on my happiness isn't dependent on this.
Yeah.
It can also actually, but do enjoy it though.
Yeah.
Do go there and enjoy it and be present and enjoy it. And if you do something, you meet somebody and you're excited to meet them, don't you? Like, oh, they, you know, who are they? I'm nobody, they're nobody. It's, you know, it's a great thing and enjoy it. And
yes, I often try to protect myself by affecting that I don't care about things that I do care about.
Yeah, totally.
I just wanted to bring things to an end then, having established that you are happy. That just to sort of leave it really on that point of like, you don't need comedy to make you happy. It does make you happy, but you don't need it. There's no desperation coming off you at all, which I think is, that can sometimes, people can rush on and say, hey, how are you doing? Are we well? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you just get just reeks of desperation. And there's none of that with you.
Yeah, I am. You know, I really love it. And it's, you know, there's a time in my life I had no idea. I always knew I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what. And then the kind of, it's easy to say now in hindsight, but the second I'd found comedy and I was confident enough to do it and actually start, that was kind of enough, really. That was kind of enough for me. And then, but you know, I'm ambitious. And, you know, it's easier to be fooled by my demeanour. I'm kind of, I've got my eye on the prize, but it's not everything to me. And, you know, other things are more important to me than that.
What's the prize?
Just being really successful and having a great career you're proud of, making a great sitcom. You know, people, you know, being a big... I remember at my 2022 show, people would come out of the room so happy and like so buzzing. And I'd be like, I remember saying to like producers, I can do this. If you let me do a script, I can do this. And make people feel like this, you know, like you, like the Christmas, like I'd love Christmas specials. I'd love a sitcom with Christmas specials. And I want people to be buzzing about something. And like, oh, this is great. That feeling of having a sitcom, getting home, I mean, it's different now because of how we consume TV, but getting back, oh, there's another episode on tonight and you've got it when the sixth episode's gone. And then there's another series. And that's what, I'd love that. I'd love to do that.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Stu.
So that was Josh, right? Right? Right. Existing La Vida Loca tours throughout the UK up to June. You can find dates at joshpugcomic.com. You can follow him at joshpugcomic on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. And you can see him on YouTube live from Birmingham Town Hall on the £800 Guerrilla Media channel. The other blurbs, if you're not in the Patreon, you can join the Patreon at patreon.com/comcompod. If you are still listening via Orsound or PayPal or Moonclerk, we're switching them all off very soon. I think 3 weeks and we're switching them all off. So if you want to continue being a member of the Insiders Club, you have to port your membership to Patreon, by which I mean switch it off and then join the Patreon. There's no porting available. But if you do that, you get full video episodes. I mean, we're really building up a bank of video stuff now. It's great. Extra content in video as well as audio. 15 minutes extra with Josh. And it is heartfelt, this one. It's heartfelt. And I think any time previously or since, if you ever hear me on the pod going heartfelt, it's basically code for I didn't want to release this bit because I felt it was too revealing of myself. So there we go. Some heartfelt extras. Guest announcements in advance, like Mac, largely as it's almost sold out to patrons because we announced it to the Patreon, and a monthly Q&A with me with a fun title. I'm going to record that later today for this month. Get your questions in through the Patreon for the next one. You also get access to the full back catalogue of extras with a new RSS feed. Patreon.com/comcompod for more info. Thank you to our insider producers who are all at a tier of Patreon in which they get their names said. They are Mike Sheldon, Ashley Stewart, James Burry, Paul Swaddle, Richard Lucas, Jonathan Stewart, Caroline Schmidt, Andres Purdy, Nick Waite, Miles Walsh, Dave McCarroll, Gary McClellan, Jay Lucas, Sam Allen and Glenn Tickle. And a big, big thank you to our special insider executive producer, Neil, that's just the way I feel, Peters. I will post Amble at you in just a moment, but the music was by Rob Smouton, the producer was producer Callum, and that was Josh Pugh. I very nearly said Ace Rimmer style. What a guy. He's such a nice dude and he's so happy and he's just got comedy just right where he wants it. And it's an inspiration to us all. Thanks, Josh. So once again, I've been sat in the cellar all morning getting work done. And by the time I come to record these blurbs, my nose is completely bunged up. I'm clearly allergic to something. Is it going to be like microphone pop shields? Because I've been fine until I've swung the microphone into place on its charming little robotic arm. So sorry. I don't know what I can do. I'm just so bunged up. This is no kind of a postamble. I've got a specific thing to talk about. Two things, really. Which should I do? This is my list of things. I've got a list of things, some of which I'll save for the Q&A, and some of which I'll do two of these here now. My Spotify Eurovision plan. That's daft. My son, the Boutros, who now no longer wants to be called Boutros. He knows that I talk about him on stage and in the podcast, and he's furious that I don't use his real name. But I think at the age of eight, yes, eight, he's... I don't think... I'm weirdly guarded about the internet. I don't want ever to be a victim of some of the awful internet bullying and shaming that happens by putting stuff online. Like, obviously, my stuff's all over the place, but I just don't think it's fair to put your kids' faces online. So I don't, and I don't put their real names online either. And that seems completely reasonable to me in a way that I can't explain. Like, loads of people do that, and it's fine. I just think... The internet's mad already, right? In the same way that we don't know what's going to happen 20 years when you vaped for 20 years. We don't know. Maybe your spine explodes. We've no idea. I think we don't really know what happens 20 years after you've been putting your kids' faces on the internet. And those occasions that we do find out about that, it's never good news, is it? But he's annoyed. Anyway, I can exclusively reveal that he's a huge Eurovision fan. And through him, I've ended up being slightly more open to the concept of Eurovision, which it's not my jam at all, really. But we discovered that you can get hold of the Eurovision finalists, you know, the entrance for the big... I didn't even know there were finalists. I thought every country just went, yeah, you'll do. But apparently there's more to it than that. But on Spotify, there's a playlist of all the people that are going to be on Eurovision. And so we have the opportunity to listen to it in advance, and I was going to play it to him, but he told me he didn't want spoilers, but so he hasn't listened to any of it. But in assessing it and having that conversation, you can click through from Spotify to all the artists' profiles on various social media, predominantly Instagram, and a lot of them, because some of them have got 10 million or 2 million followers on one thing or another, some of them have got sort of between 5,000 and 20,000 followers. So I tweeted about this, and I don't mean to do this in a mean or disingenuous way. I just thought, what a wonderful opportunity to befriend, for example, the French. I don't have the examples in front of me, but there'll be people. It would be much more fun to watch Eurovision knowing that you'd had a bit of correspondence with one of the finalists. Because I think someone who's got 5,000 followers on Instagram will probably answer a DM. I'm not suggesting you embark on some sort of friendship heist. It kind of is leaning towards that in a way that I don't mean it to. But I just thought you could sort of meet. It's just nice to know people, isn't it? You feel a bit more invested. Like if you were going to watch the Grand National, which I don't agree with, but if you were and you could make friends with one of the horses beforehand, it'd just be better, wouldn't it? It'd be more fun. Or the jockeys would make more sense. Anyway, so that's my Spotify Eurovision plan. I'll tell you about DJ Shadow, and then everything else I'll save for the Q&A, because I'm going to do that in just a second. DJ Shadow, Shadwell to his friends, not true. My friend Mark and I went to see DJ Shadow last night, and it was, I've got a couple of observations. I really enjoyed it. It didn't grab me emotionally, but I don't think it was supposed to. You might be huge fans of Shadows and tell me I'm quite wrong. It didn't grab me emotionally, but it grabbed me sort of in every other conceivable way. I stood, now this is big news in my mind. I stood for an hour and 45 minutes, occasionally dancing. It's not easy to dance to. It doesn't have but I think by design, it's not necessarily intended to be danced to. I hope I'm not slagging DJ Shadow off here. I like his work a lot. But I stood for an hour and 45 and gave it my complete attention and didn't fiddle with my phone. And I didn't go for a wee. I don't think I've spent an hour and 45 minutes in my life without going for a wee. Or even thinking, I've been that long without going for a wee, but I don't know if I've been that long without at a gig without thinking, oh God, I'm going to have to go for a wee in a minute, and getting all stressed about it. I couldn't believe how complete. I basically think, I'm halfway through, I went, oh, this is music designed for people on ADHD. That's how I'm going to refer to it now. people who have ADHD. And then I thought, oh, does that mean he has ADHD? I've no idea. Not kind to speculate about people's neurodivergent status. But also I thought, does everyone here have ADHD? Is that why we're all into the thing? Because he was like a sort of, this is going somewhere. It was arguably, he was like a sort of sushi chef mixed with an artist who has a palette of paints. And he was, rather than going like a band or a, I don't know, I don't see a huge amount of DJs. But if you go and see Hot Chip, for example, love Hot Chip. They're a band of DJs, I guess. I don't know how to describe them. But it's music and it's got, it's consistent and you can dance to it. And it's like, this is a song, it's this length, and this is the shape of it. And it's is a familiar shape, or it's a familiar shape being messed with in a way which is understandable. Whereas DJ Shadow was like, there's a bit of that. Do you want a bit of that? What about some of that? Oh, that just stops. That. What about this bit? Oh, there's a thing there that could pick up. That's a song. There's some rap over it. Now it's finished, and there's a bit of that. Whoa, it completely filled up. And it can, like, the video, the VJ stuff, the visuals, that's what the young people call it. Is it? Is it what the 40-year-olds call it? The visuals, the visual element of it was so good and interesting. It was, you know, you see some DJs where it's like someone just made some stuff to happen in the background. God, there must be music fans listening to this who've switched off. There must be music fans no longer listening to this, and I understand. But it was, I felt like, I was, and this is my point, in terms of the artistry, in terms of the decisions he had made in advance and was making, I just thought, what a brilliant thing to be at a stage in your career where you can just go, I'm just doing this. I'm doing exactly what I want to. And it's this. And it's found its audience. And it doesn't necessarily fit the shapes that you might anticipate. But you know that way that everyone always says, I always think of this, everyone always makes this point about Radiohead. They had huge hits and then they threw it all away and reinvented themselves. And then that was successful. Then they threw it all away and reinvented themselves. It's like that in some kind of a way. Whereby, I mean, there was one about, I had no idea. When he got to the end of an hour and he started talking, I thought, is this it? Is he wrapping up? No idea, because there's nothing familiar about any of the delivery of the stuff. Look, I've been to gigs before, all right? I'm not just like, oh, Stu's discovered a DJ. But the way he did it was so particular and so uncompromising in terms of, I just felt, in a way that I really liked, he was like, I want to do this now, and then I'm going to do some of that, and then I'm going to do a bit of that. And there was a bit, maybe halfway through, maybe more, where he played a thing. I was saying to Mark, do you think he's going to assemble these bits? He was just kind of putting bits out. There's a, that noise and some of that and a bit of that. And I thought, normally by now, in anyone else's performance, this would have coalesced into a, you know, I mean, here's some chaos and now order emerges. And I thought, I don't know if he's going to assemble the bits. And I felt like shouting enthusiastically, assemble the bits, man, assemble the bits. And, or maybe he's deliberately, maybe that was the point of it. He's like, these bits could be assembled, but I'm not going to. It reminds me of a sort of idea for a chunk of stand-up material I've had, which I've never really satisfactorily made work. To my satisfaction, or indeed the audience's, like once or twice I've pulled this off, where I've just sort of said, writing comedy's such hard work. Wouldn't it be nice if I could just give you the bits and you assemble them yourself? And then I sort of improvise some bits that I give to them. And then I try to improvise, to play with that idea of what that would look like in the room. Like I said, I've maybe tried it 8 times and twice it's gone, yeah, that's what I wanted it to be. The rest is too weird. But I felt like maybe he's just teasing us by coming, giving us some bits that he could assemble and then refusing, declining to assemble them and then just move on to the next track. God, it was, I really, really enjoyed it. It was a singular night. But what a joy of an artist, as an artist, to be able to go, I do this because this is what I want and it has enough of an audience. You know, it was a nice full room. Not I'm sure he wouldn't have been disappointed by the packedness of the room. But I really found it just so, it was singular and uncompromising. I've used those words both, and I have no more words with which to describe it. But taking a leaf from DJ Shadow's book, that will have to do you, because that's what I wanted to say. Please try to retain a consistent sense of self before I speak to you next. If that sort of thing floats your boat. Mark and I then had a really interesting chat in a pub about nodality, but I'll have to save that for another time.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.